I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the SmackDown After Show. We are, of course, continuing to hang out with you from our homes, trying to bring you as much entertainment as we can through this crazy, crazy time. I'm Josh Tariff. Brian's off this week. Tom's got some dad stuff to do, but fear not, because Gabby Loren is back. Hello, Gabby.
That's right. What's up, guys? Hope you had a fabulous Friday night and enjoyed SmackDown.
That's right. So, yeah, just you and I breaking down the show this week, Gabby. You think you can handle it? You ready?
I don't think you can handle it. Can you handle me?
That's a fair point. Probably not. probably not. Well, we kicked this show off this week very different, very unique style. All of a sudden, we just cut to the parking lot outside of the Performance Center where there's EMTs running around, police, one random woman with a cell phone camera, which I thought was hilarious, and obviously like wrestlers and referees, because all of a sudden we see Elias on the ground, EMTs attending to him with a crashed car. Cops are looking in the car. They discover Jeff Hardy's name is on it because it's his rental. They're trying to look for Jeff Hardy, think maybe he's in the locker room because he has a match that evening. We cut over. I loved also Renee and Kayla were both outside reporting on it at the same time. Kayla's talking with Braun Strowman because trying to see what he saw. All of a sudden they cut. Jeff Hardy is found pretty much like knocked out a little farther down by the bushes. He smells of alcohol. There's alcohol in the vehicle. Cops are questioning, put cuffs on him. Jeff is delirious, wondering what's happening. Starts screaming and panicking when he sees Elias being put into the ambulance. And you got Jamie Noble and Jason Jordan, you know, like trying to console, calm Jeff down, that we're going to figure everything out. And Jeff gets sent away by the police. A definitely crazy, heavy segment to start the show.
Yes, it was. It was interesting. So first, I'm just going to make a funny comment. The vehicle they decided to use, I love how this is like a car accident and there's no damage to the vehicle. It's just literally a vehicle a little bit on the grass or, you know, middle section of the parking lot with the front, not the trunk, but the hood. The hood. The hood was open. You know, the door was left open. Yeah.
And it was elevated a little bit. Because it's a rental. They don't want to damage it.
Yeah, they didn't want to damage it. Or it was somebody's car that works at WWE, so they just wanted to be careful. Yeah. But so that was funny to me. But overall, interesting segment. Kept me engaged. But I do feel like it's very touchy because of Jeff Hardy's past. And I know it could trigger a lot of people if somebody had a relative pass away from a drunk driving accident or if they had a DUI or an instance as the drunk driver. This could be very triggering for past trauma. So, I mean, overall, I felt engaging, but it was definitely on the line of, like, did we go too far? Yeah, and it was long, and it was definitely, like, a lengthy intro. I'm just wondering if Jeff Hardy was set up. Now, I know it plays into his past, but could somebody else have, like, drugged Jeff Hardy or knocked Jeff Hardy out? Because he kept saying his head, his head, his head. Did somebody maybe hit him, throw him in the grassy area, and plant paperwork in the vehicle that said it was Jeff Hardy's vehicle with a bottle of alcohol to make it seem as though Jeff Hardy did this to, I don't know, like get Jeff Hardy arrested and also take out Elias.
Oh, Gabby, I'm sorry to spoil this for you, but you're 1,000% right. And we're going to find this out in a week or two from the hacker.
Yeah.
The hacker is going to somehow have the footage of what happened. To me, it seemed like, based on what happened in the next segment, which we'll get into, that it couldn't have been done by one person with everything that was set up. I feel it was really Sheamus and Corbin together because they're feuding with Hardy and Elias respectively. And so, I mean, you have one of them, like, you know, attack Hardy when he's getting out of his car, bring around, pour liquor in the car, pour the liquor on him. You take the car, you hit Elias, and you run for it. Mm-hmm. And so, boom, boom. How did that happen?
Yeah.
But I mean, even if it is someone different, which it could be, I have a feeling the hacker is going to solve this mystery for everyone.
Probably. And then also with Jeff Hardy, didn't they have this whole package that kept airing in between the SmackDown shows talking about his past and how he's, I guess, moved on? So why would they now backtrack and make it? Why would he, you know, go back to that place if they're trying to promote that he's recovered?
So it's one.
Right.
It's one
so that justifies
two,
our idea.
Yeah. It's one of two things. It's because as you know, with this wrestling, depending on where you are on the totem pole, sometimes you have some say in what you will or will not do on TV. Sometimes you have to do exactly what they tell you. Even if you're higher in the card and have been in trouble in the past, you get taken down a few notches. So I'm sure one day we'll find out that either Jeff Hardy said he okayed this whole thing, or they told him he had to do it. It's one or the other. Mm-hmm. But being that, you know, the whole story with it was him trying to build up, and then he got another DUI, build back up, get another DUI, feuding with Sheamus, who was talking about his drinking problems, and now Jeff Hardy's getting built up, DUI. And so it's, I mean, they're making it clearly a part of the story. It's just the question is whether or not Jeff Hardy wanted this to be part of the story. Because like you said at the beginning, this triggers people watching it, if they've known someone or if they've personally gone through it. Jeff Hardy has gone through it. So, you know, I'm hoping that he gave the okay. He's like, I'm comfortable doing this. It makes sense for the story. I'm going to look like the hero in the end. Fine with it. I hope that's how it ends.
Could you imagine, though, like what it's like for him to be in that position to act out this scene, whether the storyline is in his favor where he didn't actually do it, somebody else planted him there, or he was the actual driver? Because like you mentioned, you know, what if this is bringing up memories and he's being triggered because he's been through it? So that alone, to act out this scene with his past, I can't imagine getting through it. Like, that's got to be a mental game you're playing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then on a side note with this, and it's a lighter side note in a way, but I'm trying to figure out why Elias still comes into work. Because in the last couple months,
that's a good point.
Elias has been thrown off a giant balcony, destroyed backstage, breaking fingers, and now hit by a car, where then WWE.com, their report on it was broken ribs and a torn pec.
Man, everybody's out for Elias.
Yeah, it's just like, why is Elias the one that keeps getting beat up? Why Elias?
Elias is going for the gold right now, so everybody that he comes across wants to take him out so he doesn't have a chance.
And from there, we cut to the backstage area. A bunch of superstars in their back arguing based with all the craziness that was going on. Adam Pearce, my man, the agent, Adam Pearce, standing tall, laying down authority, trying to get people to know what's going on, because Elias was supposed to face AJ Styles in the IC title tournament. Jeff Hardy was supposed to face Daniel Bryan in the IC title tournament. Neither of those are happening. The only people that seemed happy in the situation were Sheamus and Corbin, going back to my theory from earlier. Mm-hmm. And AJ is saying, all right, well, then I get a bye to the finals. And Daniel Bryan's like, no, let's each have a match and give other people a chance to compete for it. And he's like, no, I want to shout at the title. I don't want to risk it. You go ahead. I'm not going to do it. I get a bye. And then you had Corbin and Sheamus trying to plead their cases to get matches, whether one with AJ, one with Bryan, triple threat with Bryan. But then everyone else started chiming in. Jey Uso chimed in. Shorty G chimed in. Cesaro chimed in. Ziggler chimed in. It was like, hey, no, you guys already had a chance and you lost. We weren't in the tournament. So Pierce makes a battle royal, and the winner of that would face Daniel Bryan later in the night in the semifinal match. AJ, per his request, gets his bye. I loved this segment with all the other factors, like teasing different matches and them not happening. One thing I didn't like was we went straight from the accident to this and nothing in between. So we went nearly 30 minutes of TV before we were even inside the arena for the match, for any match.
I did feel like it flew by.
Oh, it did. It absolutely did. My only thought was, like, you do the accident segment outside. You have any random match in there, just, like, getting people introduced to the show. We'll get updates as soon as we can on what's going on, what's going to happen with the tournament, blah, blah, blah. After that match, then you go backstage. So, otherwise, you know, you just have Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and the NXT superstars that are there in attendance just kind of like, all right, when are we going to start? By the way, do you like the setup with, like, the plexiglass?
I was just going to talk about that. So wait, why backstage can, like, 12, 15 wrestlers be in a backstage promo, whatever it was? I'm sure it was probably less. And do that standing next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, but now we have to have plexiglass up in the performance center with, you know, our audience.
None of that. At the start of the Battle Royal, Michael Cole mentions we have members of the superstars that are training the performance center in NXT practicing safe social distancing in our stands, all standing 6 feet apart. And he's saying this while there is a Battle Royal happening in the ring, which is as far away from social distancing as you possibly can get in wrestling.
I think this was one of our first shows where there was absolutely no social distancing happening.
No.
Right?
There weren't any.
So it was really funny to me.
They even cut at one point, I don't remember, I think it was at the very end of the show, they cut to two of the women that were in the crowd hugging each other, doing the yes chant together. I'm like, that ain't 6 feet apart. It's just like, what? I don't understand what's happening.
I'm just wondering, is WWE testing this out to see if they can start inviting fans into the arena or, like, the performance center, I should say? Like, why are they putting plexiglass up?
Well, they're putting plexiglass to try to avoid, you know, fans, you know, or in this case, I'm surprised, you know, reaching over for the high fives, sweat flying off the wrestlers onto people. So that's why they're doing that. At the same time, one, why do they not have chairs? Why can't they sit?
Wait, were those people fans or were they, like,
wrestlers? No, they were NXT superstars.
That's what I thought. So this is them just testing it out to see what they're going to do with fans? Okay.
I think it is. I think at least at the beginning, when they do have fans come in, they're going to keep this plexiglass stuff, which it's one thing around the barriers, on the ramp, I don't like it on the ramp at all.
Well, I guess they're really – because, you know, fans are crazy. Sometimes they'll jump into the – arena ring area and try to get at a wrestler physically, so, you know, sometimes they think they're part of the show. But that's preventing them from, like, having that instance happen, because people are so stir crazy right now from being isolated for so long.
You're right. And also, I think it's also on the wrestler side, because how many times do we see spots where the wrestlers get thrown or hop over the barricade Or yeah. they do a move like Jeff Hardy, one of his signature moves is to run on the top of the barricade and jump. You're not going to be able to do those right
That's
now.
That's a good point. And, it's like their
and,
safety
and it's
measures.
Their way of making sure the wrestlers don't go to the fans. Likewise, what you said, fans, no one gets dumb and jumps to try to get to the wrestlers. Mm-hmm. So at least at first, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens.
Interesting. But what happens if they really knock into that barricade and could the, like, is the plexiglass secure? Can it fall? Like, that's a concern for me.
My only thought with that is if it's made the same type of plexiglass that is used in hockey, it's very rare that the plexiglass falls in hockey. And they're wearing helmets and pads and are skating at a faster speed than what the wrestlers would be without any padding, just running. So if it's the same thing, I mean, is it possible? Yes. Is it likely? Not really. Mm. So with that, I'm not as worried with that. I mean, personally, it doesn't make me want to get a ringside seat because I feel like it's going to obstruct my view a little bit.
Yeah, and who wants to stand in front of glass? This is actually a deterrent for being in the front row now.
Right.
This is the first time wrestling fans don't want to sit close to the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. So we get into the Battle Royal itself, 10-man Battle Royal. Match itself was fine. I was actually surprised at how long they made a 10-man Battle Royal go because they were definitely making some people look good. Grand Metalik looked fantastic in this while he was in it. Shorty G looked fantastic while he was in this. Obviously, Jey Uso. You know, we tease a little bit of Jey just being by himself. All right, let's see what he can do. And it came down to him, Jey Uso, and Sheamus as the final two. Sheamus eventually does get the win, and Sheamus then will advance to face Dan O'Brien later on in the evening. But, yeah, what did you think of the Battle Royal in itself, besides the social distance comments and everything?
I think it was fun. It was nice to finally see everybody, you know, back in the ring. It's always exciting when there's a lot happening at once. And I enjoyed watching Shorty G just as you did. Also, Jey Uso, like you mentioned, made an impact. But really, Shorty G was quite a star for some time in this match. It was fun for me to watch. I'm glad Corbin didn't win. That would have been an utter disappointment. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. Honestly, I thought it was a little long for only a 10-man battle royal. But I enjoyed it. I got excited that they let Jey Uso be the last one with Sheamus, you know, make you have that feeling of, oh, we might get a chance of somebody that we haven't seen get a singles title shot actually win. Because if it was, like, if it came down to, say, Sheamus and Nakamura, just for example, it's like, all right, well, we've seen both of them get titles and title shots and all right. Whatever. But the fact that we had Jey Uso in it, you know, gave that, like, glimmer of hope. Like, maybe. Just maybe. And that's where they pull us in. backstage, we get a very quick promo from Sonya, gearing up for her match with Lacey Evans.
This was awesome.
The promo, it was short and sweet. But then Lacey comes up from behind her and pushes her and knocks her over. Because that's what baby faces do?
I guess you're right. They don't. But you know what? I did love how they staged her in the back of the interview, in the back of this promo. And she was just listening the whole time. Because it's always like that moment you ever have when you were younger or even recently, maybe, I don't know, where you are speaking about somebody and you don't realize they're like right around you or right next to you or behind you. And
oh, sure.
And they're there. I mean, yeah. I know it happens all the time when you're younger and you're just like, shoot, that's why you're not supposed to talk about anybody behind their back because then they wind up being the one that just heard what you said. So I feel like that's exactly what happened in this backstage promo. But it was fun for me to watch her facial expressions and her demeanor from the back.
Yeah.
Just eavesdropping on Sonya Deville's comments.
Oh, yeah. No, I like that. I think it might have been better if, you know, instead of her pushing her from behind, you know, she approached like you said, there's a, it's like, oh, is that what you think of me? And just like kind of Sonya caught off guard. And then they have like a little face-to-face interaction for a second, but you're attacking someone from behind, which is the definition of a heel.
Yeah.
And you keep wanting us to think Lacey's not a heel, but she keeps acting like a heel.
Well, also, though, if she didn't push her and it was just like she came up and had dialogue with her, Sonya might not have realized that she was actually standing there the whole time. Because a lot of times wrestlers just come into the frame and they didn't hear what they said prior. They only heard a little snippet and then entered. And so I liked that they played it like, no, I'm here. You're talking behind my back. Now I'm going to push your back. That's how I took it. And so okay. I enjoyed that, okay. Regardless of heel or baby face. Technically, yeah, Lacey Evans, if she's a baby face, she doesn't seem like a baby face to me. So maybe is she like slowly turning? Like, what do you think that is?
They still can't figure her out. Honestly, I hate being negative towards a wrestler, but because she is a talented wrestler,
mm-hmm.
But between things like pushing from behind, you know, like the pushing of the Southern accent. I've heard her in interviews with a much thinner accent than what we would hear in that. The handkerchief stuff. Like, these are all heelish type mannerisms. But she's a Marine, mom, defend our country, badass blonde, the sweet, sassy Southern Belle. It's just like, you know, like, all right, you have all these things that you want us to get behind, and we should get behind them, but then you keep trickling these other things that fans prefer to boo than cheer overall. So when you give them some things that they could boo, it's going to end up being worse than, or higher, I should say, than the cheers.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get rid of the teasing with a handkerchief. You shouldn't be attacking someone from behind. If you want us to cheer for you, you got to be like the hero.
Right.
And anytime she takes a step forward with as the hero, she then takes a step back with some other mannerism. And right. That's why I think, in my opinion, just my opinion, that it's trouble elevating her to that next level because she has the talent. I really do think that. I think she has been getting better with the matches. I mean, we'll get into the Sonya match in a minute. I really enjoyed the match with her and Sonya. It's just those mannerisms pull it away from me. And
yeah.
I don't want to be pulled away from it. I want to cheer for her.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into their match, we have a quick promo in the back again with Shorty G, Cesaro, and Nakamura. Shorty G's been off TV for months. All of a sudden, we give him a big moment in that battle royal. Cesaro and Nakamura are angry at him. So we go back to short jokes. It was nothing but, you're in big trouble. Good luck, little buddy. They're just like these other things that it was just like, why is that the only way that we can have conversations with Shorty G?
Yeah. I agree. I'm not a huge fan of that. Even just hearing the commentators announce his name kind of bothers me.
His name is Chad Gable, damn it.
Yeah, I just feel like if I was in his shoes, I would kind of be annoyed. Like, this is my wrestling name. Like, this is what people are going to know me as.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope he likes it. But yeah, it does irk me a little bit in these situations.
Yeah. We then jump into the Sonya and Lacey match. And like I was just saying a minute ago, I enjoyed this match. It was very aggressive. I mean, not like a lot of moves, but they were just constantly on the ground. Bunch of punches, bunch of counters. Lacey showing her mat skills, which we haven't seen too much of on TV, but pairing her with Sonya worked out really well for that. They eventually brawl to the outside. It results in a double count out. This one where Lacey throws Sonya. She hits the corner of the announce table, which looked very painful. But then Lacey comes back in the ring saying, no, we're not done yet. Let's go. Let's keep going. And Sonya's just like, not on my watch. Like, we'll go when I want to go. And she leaves. So I'm kind of surprised that we're ending Sonya and Mandy at this point. Or maybe it's at least a pause in it.
I think it's a pause.
But I like seeing a new interaction with Sonya. Didn't have to emphasize so much of Lacey. Didn't have to emphasize so much of, hey, this blonde can do this. I was like, all right, we get it. You're blonde. And you can wrestle. Fine. But I'm intrigued with this because I liked the little bit that I saw this week. So I'm interested in seeing them wrestle a little more.
Yeah. So to agree with what you said, I'm happy also that the Sonya Mandy thing, not that it's ended, but it's on pause because I love that storyline. Don't get me wrong. Want to put that out there. But now we're seeing Sonya develop another piece or another part of her with a different wrestler. And I think that the chemistry between Lacey Evans and Sonya was really good. They did do a really great job in the ring, both character-wise and athletic-wise. And it was just cool to see because I feel like they both push each other and test each other's limits. And in that sense, it makes for a great match. You know, it like elevates the watching and the viewing experience. So I loved it. I think that these two were great together. And I wouldn't be upset to see Sonya move into another storyline now with Lacey Evans. That's a little bit more intricate than what we just saw on Friday Night SmackDown this week.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I want Sonya to, you know, kind of slowly but surely keep moving up on the ladder in the women's division until whatever babyface Bayley loses the women's championship to, where obviously everyone's expecting eventually Sasha to turn face and win it from her. So, but whenever that ends, whenever Bayley loses the title, whoever that babyface is that gets it and finishes their feud with Bayley, here comes Sonya. Because now she's wreaked havoc on everyone else up until that point. So you had Mandy, you got wins. Now you have Lacey. Then we'll be the next person. And then boom.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of anyone's game now. We'll see what happens.
Forgotten Sons cut a promo again. Again, it was meaningless. Let's move on.
That's good.
I forgot what was said by the Forgotten Sons. Moment of bliss.
Yikes. You know what's sad? It's like so forgotten about that some of these sites that post about the SmackDown results don't even include that promo.
I hope that's intentional to be a play on words for their name. But Moment of Bliss and New Day are their guests. They're exchanging weird gifts. They get interrupted by Bayley and Sasha. And there's a little bit of back and forth between Alexa and Nikki and Sasha and Bayley. New Day are just there reacting to everything. I like Alexa asked Sasha, where's your championship? Everyone else in this ring has a title.
I like how she did it, too. She counted. She's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. Where's yours, Sasha? That was
great. I also love how whenever I say Alexa, my Alexa then starts reacting to stuff in the back room. But
as cool as the Alexa Bliss, though.
Not nearly as cool as the Alexa Bliss. Or Charlotte Jr., as Bayley called her, which I'm like, wouldn't that be a compliment in a way?
But I guess no one that's like an Alexa or Charlotte, which is like a type A leader, wants to ever be in anyone's shadows like Sasha is. So it might be a compliment to somebody else that's looking to work their way up, but Alexa's already there.
That's fair. That's a fair point. Bayley then tells Alexa that Sasha's gonna, you know, kick her ass. Sasha's wearing like 5-inch heels at this point. And they're like, I'm not dressed to compete. But then Bayley during the commercial break apparently runs to the back to get Sasha some sneakers. And we have a match with Alexa and Sasha. Fun match, but you can't pay attention to it because Nikki Cross steals the freaking show. I don't remember the last time I've seen Michael Cole literally drop his head in laughter during commentary while trying to call an actual match. Because Nikki is just standing there shaking the table, just yelling at everything. Corey at one point says, like, why are we even trying? Like, he says, like, why are we trying to call the match?
Yeah.
But it was just so funny with that. Eventually, Bailey tries to interfere, knocks Nikki into Alexa, which lets Sasha get the roll-up and Sasha get the win. But it was a good match. Obviously, you know, if you're having Alexa and Sasha in a match, it's going to be good. But Nikki just stole the show.
Yeah. I don't know how you could even do commentary with all that commotion going on over there.
Yeah, it ain't easy. It ain't easy.
Yeah, no, I love, in general, I said it before, I love the Sasha Banks-Bailey duo in combination with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. I think all four of these ladies make a great dynamic. They're fun to watch. They're exciting. There's just, like, a level of professionalism with these four because they're so seasoned that makes it really fun and entertaining to watch, and the storyline is written so well. So, yeah,
it's fun. And with it, with the professionalism and experience, like you said, there are also four completely different styles from one another.
Yeah.
But they gel together very well.
Yeah, it works.
And now all of a sudden, when the women's tag team titles were pretty much not really being discussed, you got Sasha and Bayley teasing about it on SmackDown, and you got the Iconics teasing about it on Raw. So it's just like, all right, now we're doing something with this. Let's keep that momentum going. Cesaro versus Shorty G. Short, sweet match. Fast pace. You had a feeling that Shorty G was going to use his brain over the Braun. Not Strowman, but the Braun of Cesaro. Cesaro hit him with a lot of crazy uppercuts and everything. Towards the end, goes for a powerbomb. Shorty counters it into a roll-up. Gets the win. Cesaro, Nakamura not happy. I'm guessing next week, Shorty will then take on Nakamura, find a way to beat him, and who knows where it goes from there.
Yeah, I like this match. I thought, again, we see Shorty G, like, standing up for himself. So I think that's important. If he's going to be picked on, be called Shorty G, then you might as well give him a win here and there. So, and he did really good tonight. Like, overall, his matches between the Battle Royale and then with this, it was good.
Yeah. And then comes the segment that I've been waiting to talk with you about.
Yes.
We have a pool date between Otis and Mandy.
Yeah.
They have champagne, they have some fruit, they're all, you know, lying at the pool, just relaxing, unwinding, enjoying each other's company. Otis, you know, mentions, hey, you want to take a dip in the pool? And I said, you know, I think I'm just going to go take a nap. I was like, all right, that's fine. He leaves there to go nap while he goes to the pool. And then we have the dream sequence. And you know the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, right?
No, I've never seen it.
Okay. So, yeah. So I would say anyone in their probably mid to late 30s and up knew the reference that was made during this segment. Because there's a very, very famous scene. You've probably seen this scene because it's where there's, like, you know, like someone like the sexiest scenes in, like, movie history or whatever, where, you know, like, a beautiful girl, you know, like, she, like, stares at the end of the pool. The guy is, like, daydreaming about this beautiful girl and, like, stares at her at the end of the pool, and it's like she's staring at him and says, you know, like, I've always wanted you, and jumps into the pool, slow motion, just like it was. It's exactly, they took it completely from
this. This reminds me of The Sandlot with the lifeguard.
Yeah, a little bit. Luckily, The Sandlot, that's also a great one. But yeah, like, and then the moment of, you know, like, climbing up out of the pool, you know, shaking the wet hair. Now, the movie one, kids need to watch this with parents' permission, because, like, in the movie, all of a sudden she's, like, walking in slow motion, removes the top. I was like, Oh, wow. But so, like, this one obviously is just Otis, but Mandy, you know, like, going, like, biting her lip, squirting the sunscreen. It was like, wow. So Mandy all of a sudden is really, really an Otis. And this puts a whole new spin on things.
Yeah, it definitely does. I think that's why it's written out so well, because it's not the same if it's Otis having these dreams, because, like, obviously anyone like Otis is going to be, like, daydreaming over Mandy regardless. It's like, you don't need to create this scene in order for us to all know what's going on in Otis's head. But Mandy, on the other hand, it's like, she's like this 10, you know, 1 out of 10, she's a 10, and she's with Otis. And it's like, you know, we wouldn't expect her to feel that way. So it's funny and it's fun to watch.
And her, like, doing the, oh, yeah, and, like, at the end of it. And we've been joking for weeks of all he's getting is a peck on the cheek. There were no pecks on a cheek in this segment.
Yes, I was going to say. They were more into each other in the segment. In the past, that we've seen, yeah, it's a little bit standoffish. Not sure how Mandy's feeling in the moment. Does she really want to kiss Otis? But in this scene at the pool, she was all about it. All the makeout scenes were, like, intense. They were straight out of a movie. So, yeah, you're right. I loved it. It was actually kind of funny, too, because I think it rained the day they shot this, obviously. And I remember my family lives in Florida, too. So I remember on my brother's Instagram feed, I could see, like, the rain, like, downpouring in the background. So I'm like, oh, man, they must have shot this. It's probably earlier on Friday or something.
Yeah,
or whenever it rained this week, yeah. And it was funny because I'm just glad that they got the important stuff out of the way. And then it was able to add to the scene that they're, like, now all wet. So it's probably why he had to cannonball in and, like, drench her. And now, like, her hair is all wet and everything's all wet. And she goes in the water and then they have their makeout scene. So it was funny and it worked out.
Why does part of me, like the evil, sinister part of me, want eventually, now because we're seeing how into Otis Mandy is, that I want Otis to be the one eventually to end the relationship because Mandy is too clingy. Like,
that
all
would
of a sudden,
really funny.
Like, you're you know, like, you're you know, you just want sex all the time. You won't leave me alone for a second. I'm above this. Like, so all of a sudden it's Otis dumping Mandy.
I think the only way he would ever dump her in storyline is if another super hot WWE superstar comes around and wants Otis. And now it's like, whoa, I have this option too. And then Otis leaves Mandy for the other person, whoever that may be. Alexa Bliss. No, I'm just kidding.
That's all part of that master plan I mentioned a few weeks ago for Ziggler to somehow get the briefcase.
Yeah.
He gets a girl, convinces her to hit on Otis, make Mandy angry. Eventually, like, all right, what do you want, Mandy or the briefcase? But, yeah, we'll see. This was interesting. And what might have been even more interesting was we did a segue from the makeout into Kurt Angle, bright-eyed, smiley face, is like, weren't you just fired?
Yeah, he's happy to be back. Now he's getting paid again.
Yeah.
That's why he's bright-eyed.
And for some reason, Angle is the one that announces the latest acquisition to SmackDown. The bro himself, Matt Riddle, is coming to SmackDown. I like the fit for SmackDown. Matt Riddle should have been in that battle royal as his debut. Because if you're having the people trying to fight for a shot into the IC title tournament, what better way to make waves than all of a sudden Matt Riddle debuts, wins the battle royal, whether he wins or loses against Daniel Bryan, at that point would be irrelevant because you had Matt Riddle debut and have a match with Daniel Bryan on his first night in SmackDown.
That's a great point.
But they're building him up, and we'll see how he fits in with the roster. I just always get scared whenever I watch him wrestle. I want him to wear boots or shoes so badly. I hate watching wrestlers wrestle barefoot. It just it terrifies me. Like,
I agree.
Dangerous.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, how does this guy do this? Because, okay, side note, I recently bought rollerblades. And I plan to do some skate sessions in, like, quiet, paved path neighborhoods in Los Angeles. But I just tried them on the other day, and I'm like, man, this is, like, difficult when you haven't done it in a while and, like, just balancing and stopping. And I'm thinking, like, man, I need protective gear. I just bought knee pads, but maybe I should invest in elbow pads and wrist pads and helmet just in case something happens. And I'm like, and then I put it in perspective too, because I'm like, wow, this guy, Matt Riddle, like, he is so unprotected. He's literally in these short shorts, no equipment. How are you doing this? And how are you not nervous you're going to not hurt yourself, you know?
And now, you know, when things, quote unquote, go back to normal, if Raw and SmackDown go back to their usual routines of having three or four shows a week, and depending on a pay-per-view, you might be wrestling 3 to 5 times a week plus travel, which you're doing obviously some with NXT, but not to the extent of Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah.
That's going to take a toll.
Yeah, I don't.
Wear some damn boots and knee pads.
Mm-hmm. I'm scared for him. I feel like if it was anybody else who had been wrestling for a while and already on main roster for a while, they would have like adjusted, because as in adjusted to more protection. Because once these wrestlers start working like these crazy schedules and they're always on and always wrestling, there's injuries that happen. And then now that they've like sprained one ligament, it's going to affect the rest of their, you know, leg or foot or whatever. And for the rest of their life, like, even if you're healed, like, I'm sure there's always pain or risk of re-injuring yourself again in the future. So I think when Matt Riddle has more time under his belt doing main roster, he might realize it's not such a smart idea. I might need to incorporate gear into my routine.
Well, the last wrestler that I remember that did this was Rusev. In NXT, Rusev was barefoot. Yeah. Now, I believe he put tape around his feet, but he was still barefoot. Went to the main roster, barefoot. After so many months, I don't know. I felt like he had, like, a minor ankle injury. I don't remember what. Like, in, like, a battle royal, he got thrown over the top rope, landed awkwardly, and all of a sudden, he's wearing boots. Yeah. And then he's wearing... And then he's wearing, did he wear knee pads? I don't remember, but he definitely had boots. So I have a feeling that's going to be the same thing with Riddle.
Yeah, for sure. Once you have that injury, you can't re-risk injuring the same part of your body. So he'll wind up getting there at some point.
Yeah. Main event, Sheamus versus Dan O'Brien for the semifinal Intercontinental title tournament. Just like the match last week with Sheamus and Jeff Hardy, Sheamus dominated nearly this entire match. He's getting ready for the bro kick. Somehow Jeff Hardy shows up. They don't play the music. The crowd doesn't see him because they're watching the ring. And it's like a very slow, oh, it's Hardy. Hey. And that's when Sheamus turns in distraction, runs into the running knee. Brian gets a win. Hardy then attacks Sheamus after the match. Sheamus escapes. WWE.com said afterwards that that Hardy was released after they questioned him and everything like that. They ruled that obviously he was not at fault, which we all knew. And
what do you mean we all knew? Not everybody knows.
Oh, Gabby.
Oh, Josh.
and now again the mystery continues of who set up Jeff Hardy, who ran over Elias.
This validates our original prediction that and I think it was what you thought it was, Sheamus, right?
Sheamus and Corbin, like Sheamus, something like Corbin, group effort. Yeah,
but this it confirms it, because now Hardy's giving him a beat down after the match. So why would he, the first thing he does after he gets released is go after Sheamus? It's because he knows who attacked him.
Right. Absolutely. And with that, I don't know off the top of my head if the Dan O'Brien AJ Styles match now, if that's going to be a Backlash or if that's just going to be on SmackDown. I want it, in a way, as much as I love for it to be on SmackDown so we can just break it down, I think since they're hyping Backlash with the greatest wrestling match ever with Edge and Orton, I want them to also have Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles on that card. Because that could be the greatest wrestling match ever.
Like more than one greatest wrestling match ever.
The two greatest wrestling matches ever.
The two greatest.
Yeah, so that's how SmackDown ends. But don't you worry. That's not how we end. Because Gabby's here. So we got some wrestling rap to do. I know it's just me. She's going to do the news too right now. But that's fine. We're going to roll with it.
Welcome to Wrestling Rap, you guys. We have some stories for you this week. First one is how WWE banned the use of the buckle bomb. So we're adding another banned performance finisher or, you know, whatever to the mix. So now adding that to also a few other things that aren't allowed that we already know about. I'm going to get into that in a sec. But this move is also known as a power bomb into the turnbuckles, if you guys are wondering. And it was first reported by PW Insider and verified by Brian Alvarez. And it's unclear as to why this decision was made, but on an April 20th Raw, there was a match that featured a move delivered by Nia Jax to Kairi Sane that drew significant criticism because Sane's head was hit in the middle turnbuckle awkwardly. So the most well-known incident from that same move was in 2015 at WWE's Night of Champions pay-per-view. And we saw WWE champion at the time, Seth Rollins, deliver the buckle bomb to Sting, injuring his neck. So it looks like it's just obviously a move that could create a serious injury, and it's a little too risky. And that's why WWE probably put this on the ban list. Now, it's also joining a slew of other things, like I mentioned at the top. It's going to be joining the pile driver, the chair shots to the head, and several other moves that are currently on that ban list that I'm sure you can find somewhere on Google. What do you think about them banning this move? Do you think it was smart? Do you think it was dangerous? What's your opinion?
I really enjoy the move, but their history has shown people have gotten hurt by it. And if they're big on, you know, refraining a lot of the moves that involve quick reactions on the head and neck, like a pile driver, then I'm not surprised that they're banning this. What surprises me, though, is we're getting more and more variations of DDTs where the wrestlers are literally putting themselves on headstands. And those are still fine, but this one is not. Because I don't want to get rid of the DDTs because they look amazing. Buckle bombs look amazing. Pile drivers look amazing, but they're all incredibly dangerous. So it is one of those risks. I mean, it's also kind of gauging who is taken and everything like that, because obviously I can't specify exactly, but when you have Nia do it to Kairi, obviously Nia's a lot bigger than Kairi. She can throw her quite far.
Yeah.
You have Seth and Sting in a situation where, you know, Sting not with the endurance at that point as he certainly had well in his prime, maybe not necessarily able to get fully up at that point after they went X amount of minutes in the match. You know, there are all different things. Maybe someone was hurt, couldn't get him up in position. All different things happen. It's just really a matter then of if someone isn't comfortable with doing the move, whether they talk about it backstage or in the ring, you got to communicate with each other.
Right.
You can call. You guys are they're trained to the extent to call audibles if they feel it's necessary. They certainly probably didn't at that point. They did it, and accidents happen. But I'm not surprised based on its track record. But there are other moves that are still done on a fairly regular basis that seem just as dangerous. So it's kind of, why stop this one when you haven't stopped these?
Totally. I agree. Next up, we have great news. Let's talk about some positive things.
Yeah.
WWE's JoJo, a.k.a. Josiane Offerman, and our beloved Bray Wyatt have had their second child together, And that happened this past Thursday. They announced it on their social media channels. And we do know that they already had one child back in May of 2019 named Nash Six Rotunda. And this second baby is named Hyrie Von Rotunda. I hope I'm saying that right. Almost sounds like Kyrie, like Kyrie Zane, but it's Hyrie, H-Y-R-I-E.
H-Y-R-I-E. Okay.
Yeah.
And the middle name was Von.
Von Rotunda.
V-O-N?
V-O-N.
Yep. So I think that's a name of some legendary Japanese wrestler, but I have to look it up. But obviously you had Nash Six, Rotunda, Von, as in the Von Erichs. He's naming his kids after wrestlers.
That's so funny.
This explains why Bray hasn't been on TV the last few weeks. It makes perfect sense.
What were you gonna say?
I said to me that makes sense where, you know, after the last pay-per-view, which name is now Escape Money in the Bank, we haven't seen Bray on TV. Mm-hmm. You've been pushing Miz and Morrison to have a little thing with Braun.
Yes.
So it kind of gives Bray a month off so he can be there with JoJo while they have their baby.
Makes perfect sense. I also, going back to the names, think it's cool that, yeah, he's naming the kids after wrestlers. At the same time, it's very 2020 of him, because all of these, like, celebrities now are naming their kids, like, the weirdest things. Like, you have, like, you know, Kim and Kanye West, and then you have, like, Elon Musk and his girlfriend with their baby.
Which, who knows? I have no idea how to pronounce that, and
I have no idea either. And apparently they had to change the name. Because I guess in California State, you cannot have, I think it's numbers in a child's name.
Yeah, you could have a number in the legal name.
So I think they changed it to, like, the Roman numeral or whatever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Such craziness. So, yeah, I feel like JoJo and Bray are pretty much following that bandwagon of, like, these odd names. I mean, yes, they're wrestler names, but at the same time, like, Six.
Is JoJo still under contract?
So it does. I don't have the information, but I do know that she hasn't done ring announcing since the announcement of her first child. So we know she had her first child in May 2019. So this was probably back either in early 2019 or end of 2018 when she most likely stopped working.
The last time we saw her.
Yeah. So it could be, but I would think like, even if she was under contract with WWE, just, like, laying people off, that, like, I mean, well, no, it's discriminatory if someone says they're pregnant and then you fire them, but.
Yeah. It's not going to happen during the pregnancy, but.
Yeah, it could be that her contract's maybe about to expire. I feel like they do a lot of, like, 3-year contracts, so mm-hmm. Could be expiring, like, next year if she doesn't come back. Yeah. Who knows? If you guys have any idea on that, let us know in the comment section. So next up, we found out that Nigel McGuinness was also furloughed by WWE. Now, when WWE announced a bunch of their layoffs, furloughs, you know, firings because of coronavirus, they only announced one list that we've seen. But there's also people that were in that mix, I guess, that weren't announced. And, I mean, we even know some of them, but, like, speculating-wise. But, yeah, this one was confirmed by Wrestling Observer's newsletter. And I guess the many that were working in NXT that were not named by WWE when they were released and furloughed, that's specifically in NXT. And Nigel McGuinness had worked for NXT UK. So he was on the commentary team with Andy Shepherd. Do you guys think he'll be back once this is all over? Or you think anyone who is an announcer or on commentary that was laid off during this process will probably not be brought back
I think he'll be back because he was NXT UK and NXT and 205 Live. Mm-hmm. He was really pretty much doing all of them. So this one is definitely surprising that they did it, but especially for the UK brand, mm-hmm. I definitely see him bringing him back eventually when it comes. So that I'm not. I don't want to say the word worried because I'm not worried about him, but I think, and he's too good to not keep.
Yeah, makes sense. Also, speaking of wrestlers potentially being let go, laid off, whatever, we were shocked and stunned when we thought Drew Gulak was going to be leaving WWE, but turns out he is back in action, as we saw on SmackDown this week, and it looks like he just signed a multi-year contract with WWE as of this week. The Wrestling Observer newsletter also reported that as well, and also they had confirmed that promoters attempted to contact Drew Gulak, of course, during that period of time where, you know, his contract was in question and he might have been a free agent, but he clearly had a destination, in quotes, in WWE. So I guess he's not going anywhere anytime soon, which is very exciting for all of us, because I know we were loving where his storyline was going. So there's no better time than being in a good storyline than for your contract to expire at that point, so that they can realize how worth it you are. So yeah, I'm glad WWE kept him.
We were just talking about either last week or 2 weeks ago, we're just like, you know, his contract ended. They didn't agree on terms of it. He then could immediately show up anywhere, which is why everyone was trying to reach out to him, and rightfully so. But he obviously was on such type of good terms. It was like, we're going to get it worked out. Even if I miss a week or two of TV, you know, it's going to work out in itself. And obviously it did, because we had that backstage, you know, skirmish with everyone. It's just like, wait, didn't they just say he was gone? But he's there. So good. Good for him. Good for getting a new contract. Keep pushing the guy, because he deserves it.
Wow, you have to have a lot to be grateful for at this point, Drew, because it's unbelievable during a time like this when people are losing their jobs and livelihoods that not only were you having your contract expire, you were in an amazing storyline on TV. All these other promotions are contacting you to be a part of their promotions. You're wanted. And then you sign a multi-year contract with the biggest company in the wrestling business. So that's got to be super exciting for him, and also something to be proud of, for sure.
Absolutely.
100%. To finish off wrestling wrap for this week, I'm sorry, you guys, but we got to go soon. Kevin Owens put out a tweet on his Fight Owens Fight page, and he just put hello with an exclamation point, and it's him on the couch with his daughter and their big black cat. And he has three different photos.
That was your Kevin Owens news? Yeah. That he tweeted hello?
It was this morning. And it's just, it's so funny to me because it's such a random tweet. So random news bit. But it's a random tweet that he put out. And his cat's pretty big in these photos. And he's like hiding behind the cat with his eyes out in the back. You know, they're just super funny. So go check out Kevin Owens, black cat.
How'd you feel about Owens losing to Angel Garza on Raw?
I never feel happy when Kevin Owens loses.
No, and he lost to an up-and-comer.
Yeah, that's not cool. Maybe that's why he put this tweet out, to let us know, hello, he's still alive. Like, he wasn't taken out, you know? Like, I'm coming back for more. Hello, it's me. That's what he's saying.
I'm sure you're right about that. All right, well, we're gonna wrap this show up, but obviously we want to know your thoughts with the news that Gabby presented, as far as what you think of who done it, who ran over Elias, who framed Jeff Hardy. So let us know in the comments on YouTube, on iTunes, and of course you can talk to us on various forms of social media. Gabby, how can people reach out to you?
You guys can definitely connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Gabby Loren TV. Also, please follow my podcast page. We upload new videos and episodes on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific to the YouTube channel, but it's called Breaking Bread with Allie and Gabby. So on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, you can find it at BBWAG Podcast. Make sure you check it out. It's self-development, spirituality, and a dose of Torah. What about you, Josh?
There you go. Well, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh_Tariff. My YouTube page, youtube.com/Josh Tariff. You know, we put the recap shows on there. I have my Josh Talks show on there. Oddly enough, Josh Talks gets uploaded also every Tuesday at 8 a.m. So you got a whole big morning watch along between Gabby's show and my show. Just that's got your morning unlocked. Or watch Gabby's on Tuesday, save and watch mine on Wednesday, whatever you prefer. It's fine. And of course, you know, Christian Rosenberg stuff, prowrestlingtees.com/Christian Rosenberg. Support Shad Gaspard and his family, collarandelbowbrand.com. Get the shirt. All the proceeds go to his family, of course. And for all the other TV news and gossip for recaps, follow AfterBuzz TV on Twitter at AfterBuzz TV. Thanks for tuning in for Gabby Loren. I'm Josh Tariff, and we will see you later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.